This morning, we get to open Genesis 1, the story of creation. And as we read through the top of your bulletin, the insert says verse 1, 3 through chapter 2, verse 3. That's not a typo. I know there's a lot of times that there are typos at the top. This one does spill into chapter 2. So 34 verses this morning on creation. But as we consider creation, we're going to read a verse that says, God created the heavens and the earth. And I think how easy that is to overlook the vastness of what that means. Just in a single verse, created the heaven and the earth. I want to take just a few moments here at the beginning to understand what does that mean? And so most of this comes from a talk given by Louis Giglio. Most of you might know who that is, called Indescribable. I will sum up in about 4 minutes what he does in about 40 minutes. So I highly encourage you to go home and watch that on YouTube called Louis Giglio, Indescribable. But I think it helps account for the size that we are. When you think about maybe like a satellite image of Alt, you could look down and you could probably see this building when they were looking over Alt and you say, okay, that's where we're here this morning. But when you zoom out, right, you see that we're in a state of Colorado and you might not even be able to see Alt on a map of Colorado. And if you continue to zoom out, people have called any states in the middle flyover states, right? Because they're concerned with the coasts, and oftentimes they just fly over what would be in the middle. But I want to zoom out to the whole Earth. So you think of this picture of the Earth, and when you realize that Colorado, or the United States, only makes up 1.8% of that globe. Not Alt, not this building, not Colorado. All of America only makes up 1.86% of the globe. And if we zoom out one more time, we actually realize that the Earth is actually that tiny dot when you compare the Earth to the sun. That when you continue to zoom out, you realize how small we actually are to the known world. Okay, so now let's imagine our Earth and our sun makes up a solar system. And I want you to envision that solar system, all of the planets in our solar system, makes up one quarter. That quarter would make up, when you think about the galaxy that we're in, that would be the continent of the United States, or of North America, sorry. So all of North America, in North America there's a quarter, and that's our galaxy. Our solar system is that quarter. So if we see the Milky Way, that's the galaxy that we're in, it's actually 100,000 light years across. Light travels at 186,000 miles per second. 186,000 miles per second. In 1 year, it can make 5.88 trillion miles. That's how far it can go in 1 year. That's one light year. And our galaxy is 100,000 of those light years. 5.8 trillion times 100,000 to make it across. You couldn't even see our solar system. That arrow is pointing to our solar system inside our galaxy. Man's fascination with this idea of space, we send telescopes up to space, we try to explore outer space, we have a fascination with discovering space. In fact, we have a term called the known universe, implying that there is some that we will never know. We continue to try to define what the known universe includes. In the effort to discover space, we launched a satellite called Voyager 1 in 1977. Voyager 1's goal was to just go as fast as it can into space and take pictures and send it back so we could learn this known universe. 1977, we launched it. 1990, when it was 3.7 billion miles away from Earth. So a fraction of what we're seeing here, not even that far away. We said, okay, before you get too far, I want you to turn around and take a picture of Earth. 3.7 billion miles away. You know what that picture was? This is Earth. 3.7 billion miles away. It wasn't a mistake. That is Earth. That tiny, it's called the pale blue dot. In that sliver of light, you see one pixel of light. That's Earth. That's us. 3.7 billion miles away. And it's amazing what science can accomplish when we come to discovering this. And as we scratch the surface, we begin to question, how does that make us feel? How do we respond to knowing that we are just a tiny pale blue dot in this picture? If you remember that first picture of Earth, that was actually taken by the astronauts in Apollo. They looked back on their way back from the moon and they took a picture of this Earth. And Neil Armstrong said this, "It suddenly struck me that that tiny pea, pretty blue, was Earth." He's looked out the window, he saw Earth. He says, if he put his thumb up and shut one eye, the thumb blotted out the planet Earth. This is his perspective from the Apollo space on the spaceship coming back. And he says, in that moment, he didn't feel like a giant. He felt very, very small. The only man, one of the few men who have went to space and could say that he could hold up his thumb and blot out the Earth, didn't feel like a giant. He didn't feel like he accomplished anything. He felt very, very small. And so as I was looking through these pictures, and again, go watch the Louis Giglio to get a better feeling, you feel the extreme vastness that our Creator created. Our minds are blown as we tried to wrestle and understand what the universe would be. And so as we read Genesis, my heart couldn't help but ask, how should we respond to a Creator whose creation we can't begin to fully understand or even grasp? We as the creation, how can we respond to the Creator of whose creation we can't fully understand or grasp? So with that in mind, will you turn with me to Genesis chapter 1, verses 3. We'll read verse 3 through chapter 2, verse 3. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that there was light, was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. He called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening and morning one day. Then God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the water, and let it separate the waters from the waters." God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse, and it was so. And he called the expanse heaven, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. And God said, "Let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let dry land appear." And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the gathered water he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And then God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed and fruit, and trees on earth bearing fruit after their kinds, with their seeds in them." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seeds after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seeds in them and after their kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the third day. And then God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from night, and let them be for signs for the seasons and for the days and years. And let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God placed in them the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth and to govern the day and the night and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. There was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. Then God said, "Let the waters teem and swarm with living creatures, and let the birds fly above the earth in the open expanse of heaven." God created the sea monsters and every living creature that moves with the waters, swarmed with their kind, and with every winged bird after its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind." And it was so. God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the ground after its kind. And God saw that it was good. Verse 26, God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over the cattle and over the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them male and female. He created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish and of the sea and over the birds in the sky and over every living thing that moves on earth." Then God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seeds on its surface of the earth and every tree which has yielded its seed and shall be food for you, and to every beast of the earth and every bird of the sky and to everything that moves on earth, which has life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw that he had made, and behold, it was very good. There was evening and morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were accompanied or completed by their hosts. By the seventh day, God completed his work, which he had done, and rested on the seventh day from all of the work in which he had done. Let's pray. Jesus, we know that this is your living word. Lord, I pray that as we talk and ponder it today, that it be your spirit that's alive in our hearts. May it be your words that we hear this morning. Lord, may I stand on your word and not in front of it. May I bring no offense to the word of God. In Jesus' name, amen. As we hear that story, again, how should we respond to a creator whose creation we can't fully understand or grasp? Last week, we kicked off Genesis. Mike helped us by kicking off the first two verses. And he made it clear that the author was Moses, and he began to break down the purpose of Genesis, that we could understand the beginning or the origin. And if we put up that slide, it's a little bit hard to read. You can see that the first four sections of Genesis, the first 11 chapters, describe the origin of the human race, how it was that we came from creation, how we fell, the flood, and the nations. Those were the first four stories that shaped human race. And then we see a pivot in chapter 12. Chapter 12, we switch to the origins of the nation of Israel, his people group that was made special. All of Genesis about the origins and the beginning. The first four stories about mankind. The second four generations about the nation of Israel that later becomes all of his chosen people. And Mike kicked us off in those first sections, so we're going to spend time in the first section called creation. He kicked us off with the first two verses of that section. Verse 1, he said, was the thesis, that the overarching promise of that section of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. A single verse that explains what's about to come. And then in verse 2, we see an account of how that started out. It started out void and with darkness. Those were the conditions that we had to start. We see in verse 2 that was the first mention of the Trinity. It talked about the surface was moving over this void, over the surface of the water. Today we pick up that story starting with day 0, before anything started, the void, formless start. And by day 6, we're going to see a vibrant, living world created for our use. And we broke down, I broke down this morning into two main sections. What did God create? The first 6 days that we're going to talk through, what did he create? And then we're going to start a little bit of pondering, why might he have created it that way? Why did he create what he created? Not that we could fully understand God, but he gave us his word, he gives us his spirit, that we might glean certain things from the text. What he created and why he created it. I would fully expect us to not be able to understand the creator. Our question this morning was, how can creation understand a creator? Isaiah 45 gives us that same rhetorical question. Does the clay say to he who formed it, what are you making? Does he question his creator by saying, this work has no handles? The idea that creation knows its place for the creator. There's a relationship between the creator and creation. I pray that today's questioning and pondering helps us fully marvel, appreciate, and praise the creator that we begin to understand. Two questions that have come up for many, many years that I think would be important to cover before we start. Question one, when it says days, is he talking literal 24-hour periods of time, one rotation of the earth around the sun, or was it a metaphorical period of time? That question is up to each person to wrestle with. It would depend on your translation of Genesis. Do you believe it to be narrative, which is a literal account? You think about the Gospels when they took an eyewitness account of Jesus's days and wrote it down for us, a narrative, literal interpretation? Or do you understand it to be figurative, symbolic, meaning to teach you a lesson? There are some examples in Psalms and poetry where the author took creative liberties to try to use your imagination to make a point that was worth making. And so that is what you have to ask yourself. Do you think this is a literal narrative of what happened, or do you think he's trying to teach you a lesson? Mike mentioned, and I agree, that we believe this is a narrative account, that this is a literal 24 hours. But we understand that we hold an open mind that we could be wrong. We hold that we want to believe that it's narrative until there's reason to prove that it's a figurative speech. The danger would be that if you think it's figurative only because you can't understand it, the danger would be that there would be a lot of things that you, the creation, can't understand about the Creator. So we must hold an open mind that, for example, in 2 Peter, when it says 3:8, the Lord, with the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. So there are the understanding that God is time, that there is no constraints upon God, that he has to work inside something that we understand, that there is the possibility that he works outside, and that when he tries to explain that to us, he's going to use a term that we can understand. And so all things are possible, even the impossible things could be possible with God. And so we hold an open mind, but we believe that it's a literal 24-hour period of time. Based on that answer, you have a lot of people who ask the question, can we tell how old the earth is? As we try to go back in time and we see the origin of earth, that's what this story is, how old, how long ago was that? And there's a lot of questions that people can't answer. Two main points, two main theories that I wanted to just highlight for you to consider. Young earth creations believe this is a story that existed between 2,000 and 4,000 years ago. And old earth creations believe it could be 4.5 billion years ago. So you take those young earth, old earth, literal and narrative and metaphoric, and pray that you see. But we come from a stance that it's narrative and literal and of the shorter time frame. But I hold the encouragement that debating this with fellow Christians is could be fun, and it could help explain and strengthen our theology. But I pray that our deeper desire would be to help us strengthen our Christianity. What is it that's most important? So as we talk through this day, there are some things that I would say, I don't know. I don't know if it was 24 hours period or if it was 4.5 billion years ago. But there's some things in this first chapter that I believe speak to our heart today that strengthen our Christianity. And oftentimes we use a strategy where if the author repeats something more than once, that's what he ultimately wanted you to understand, that he had many lessons that he was conveying inside that, but the things that he repeats, that's the ultimate purpose. And we see that idea of repetition multiple times here. Verse 1 said that God created the heavens and the earth, and then we went through all of the rest to talk about how he created what he said in verse 1. On day 6, he takes the most amount of words, spends the most amount of time describing creatures on earth. And we're actually going to see that he does this again next chapter. He goes back and re-describes what he did in chapter 6. The point would be that he didn't take extra time to go back and explain how long it took him to do it. He took the extra time to go back and explain what he did. So that, to me, seems like the most important part of chapter 1. I believe he chose to give us extra details on what he did as opposed to how he did it. So as I was putting this together, in your bulletins and up on the slide, there's a chart that in the veins of repetition, the idea that there were days that were paired together. And so in your bulletin, I tried to make that same chart. This is not thus saith the Lord. So if you think this is confusing to you, turn the paper over, take your own notes on the back. But the idea is, as we go through this, we're going to see he creates three expanses: day 1, day 2, day 3. He creates them. Day 4, 5, and 6, he fills those expanses. We see repetition. He goes back over days 1, 2, and 3 and fills in what he created on those first 3 days. So if that fits with what you're studying, you can try to take your notes there. But I think it helps organize this chapter 1. Okay, enough of the talking. Let's break it down. So day 1 is what we're going to cover first, the creating of that first expanse, the creating of the cosmos, verses 3 through 5. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that it was good, and God had separated the light from the darkness. God called the day light and the darkness night. And there was evening, and there was morning, day one. The first truth we see, God said, let there be light. He didn't say, let's set into motion something that would eventually produce light. He spoke, and then following, it existed in no amount of time. He spoke into existence light. And the first thing we have to understand with that chart was on day four, he didn't create the sun until day four. So this light he's asking about in day one, what was the purpose of the light in day one? My summarization is that the purpose was to separate darkness. Verse 2 gives us the void and darkness that was the world in which he was working with, a blank canvas that was dark, and God spoke into creation, himself into creation, into this void. He interjects his light into this void darkness. 1 John 1:5 explains that this is the message heard from him and announced to you, God is light. In him there is no darkness at all. The idea that light might not have been the sun that gives us visible light. On day one, we're talking about void and God interjecting himself as light into this creation. Verse 5 begins to muddy our comprehension. God called the light day and the darkness night. Again, apparently there was day and there was darkness without the sun and moon. He says there was evening and there was morning. And so in verse 5, our first time where we stretch our imagination to say that there was day, there was night, there was evening, and there was morning, all without the sun. Some have tried to use that. This proves that there couldn't have been literal days made because it wouldn't work. It couldn't comprehend. And again, if our only understanding is that it's metaphorical because we can't understand, I think we cut the Lord short to try to put him into our understanding of how the world works. God doesn't need sun to measure and to understand time. God is time. God existed before time. Turning our eyes to verses 6 through 8, day 2, he created the second expanse, the heaven and the earth. God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters. God made the expanse, and it separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven. And again, there was evening, and there was morning the second day. If that was a bit troubling to understand, he uses expanse five in only three verses. Expanse five times. Water three times. If you remember back to verse 2, the only thing that existed before the time was God and water. The Spirit was above the void, the water. And praise God that he has given us Mike and that he has given us a bunch of people who work differently. I fell asleep in biology class, and Mike was good to explain to us that water is the life source of all living creatures, that without water, nothing can exist. And so, verse 2, we see that he separated the expanse of this water into organized, useful spheres or expanses. He separated it into two different waters. What my literal brain understands that as he separated the atmosphere from the water below. He began to separate them with intentionality to come back and fill them. We've seen in the past, especially in Revelation, that the idea that they use the word sky, and that they use the plural world sky to mean heavens. That he was carving what once was useless and void now into expanses that will be used for purpose for his creation. And we're again left with morning and evening on the second day, still without a sun. Day 3, Genesis 1, 9 through 13. And God said, let the water below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let dry land appear. And it was so. He called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the water he called the seas. And God saw that it was good. And then God said, let there sprout vegetation, plant yielding from its seed, and fruit from its trees, bearing fruit after their own kind. And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seeds in them after their kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a third day. God begins to make use of this second void that he created. He created earth in day two, begins to form it into pooling the waters together so that land appears. We also see that he started labeling this as earth. And for the first time in this third expanse, we see him take two actions. And I think that, again, as we see the amount of time spent, we see the first two creations, but the third expanse, we see two actions taken. Not only did he create and give us an expanse, but he gave us a second command that we see life in verse 11. That life is producing seeds and fruit, but yet we see an organization, not chaos. We begin to see that the organization of its kind, seeds after their own kind, that there be a purpose and structure into this earth. And we pay special attention to what gets repeated. Verse 11 and verse 12 are repeats of each other. Verse 11 was the call, and verse 12 is the response of earth to that call. Let the earth sprout vegetation. And the earth brought forth vegetation. Simply by speaking words, this earth responds and begins producing vegetation. And we see that God saw it and it was good. A theme that we see every day, that what he is doing is good for us. We'll ultimately see in day six that this was made for us. But he is pleased with what has happened. He evaluates everything, and he sees that there's life and there's fruit. There's organization and rhythm, and it was good. And so we move into day 4, verses 14 through 19, and we begin to see, we go back to that first expanse, that first cosmos expanse, and begin to fill it. Verse 14, God says, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heaven that separates day from night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light unto earth." And it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater for the day to govern the day and the lesser to govern the night. He also made the stars. God placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, and to govern the day and the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. God saw that it was good, the evening and morning, the fourth day. Going back to refill and finish that first expanse, he fills the cosmos with lights that separate the day from night, and he does this with purpose, that they be for seasons, for days and years. We see for the first time that these two expanses are now working together with each other. Not independent expanses, but that the purpose of the cosmos was to give light unto the earth. And he will give light. And we think about all that we talked about at the very beginning. All of the stars that get created, and for there simply to be one line that says, "And he placed the stars in the sky." 100,000 light years worth of stars and more that we can't even understand. In a single verse, put the stars in the sky for the purpose of giving light to the earth. Verse 14, God said. Verse 15, and it was so. Out of his mouth, he spoke into existence. Verse 16 felt odd that Moses would say the two great lights, the greater to govern the day and the lesser to govern the night. Moses knew the term sun and moon. That wasn't new to him. He wasn't describing something he didn't understand. The best explanation that I came across was that many of the day had the idea of polytheism, the idea that there were multiple gods. One of the two gods were sun and moon. And to downplay that these two beings weren't more than just, they weren't a god, they were simply a creation that the monotheism God created. He used the terms light, greater and lesser lights in the sky, simply stars in realm four, in the first realm that he created. Again, to focus and point to the creator as the most important, as opposed to the creation that he created. But I find it comforting that he used these to govern the earth, that he gave them as organization and as purpose for something that he wanted for us. Not only did he understand it, that he formed it, and that he sent it out, then it was good. On day four, all of the earth, all of the cosmos was good. Day five, he fills the heavens and the earth, the water that we read. Verses 20 through 23, he says, "Then God said, 'Let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures. Let the birds fly above the earth in the open expanses of the heavens.' God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarmed after their kind, and with every winged bird after its kind. And God saw that it was good. And then God blessed them and said, 'Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth.' It was evening, and there was morning, the fifth day." This divided waters from heaven and sea now begin to be filled in teams and swarms according to each of their own kind. If you want to dig deep, verse 21 gives you plenty of opportunity with words that are odd and unique. The idea of the large sea monsters, often referred to later as dragons or monsters. Isaiah speaks of them four times as dragons, the same word, and monsters in Job 7. He fills the waters with swarms and great sea monsters. My finite mind would love to run with what that means and how that fits into creation and dinosaurs and dragons and all of these things that people begin to ask us with. Yet the author didn't take time to explain what he meant by sea monsters. This powerful creator creating unimaginable creation. Every winged bird in the sky, according to its kind. Every sea creature, according to its kind. What would take impossible amount of time to even name, he creates. And it was good. He tells them to multiply and fill the waters and the sky. And then comes day six. Genesis 1, 24 through 31. "Then God said, 'Let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth after its kind.' And it was so. God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the ground after their kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, 'Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle of all of the earth, and over every creeping thing that is on the earth.' God created man in his own image. Of the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth.' And God said, 'Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed over the surface of the earth, and every tree yielding its fruit and its seed. It shall be food for you. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to everything that moves on earth which has life, I have given every green plant for food.' And it was so. God saw that all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. There was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Every animal imaginable God created and said it was so. In the same fashion, in verse 25, we see that he organizes every species into its own kind. And he says it was good. And as powerful and big of deal as that was, verses 26 and 27, we find ourselves at the crescendo of God's creation. Everything up until this point was good, and we find ourselves God and humankind. Not only have we seen the idea that realms interact with one another, that they have purpose and order and organization with each other, but for the first time, we see that the creation in day six has rule over the other realms. God entrusts and expects us to steward this creation that he had just built. And we'll spend many times later on verse 26, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. What big, bold words for the Creator to say to his creation. This is why God created the earth. We'll finish with day seven and we'll come back to verse 26, that he made us in according to his image and his likeness. Verse 28 in day six says that he created us to subdue and to rule over this creation. And verse 29 says that he created it for food for us, for a purpose that we could use the rest of creation for us. That's why he created the rest of creation, and it was so. And for the first time in verse 31, he saw what he saw and said it was very good. We see progression, not only in complexity of what he's creating, but also that we end with him being pleased, very good. Repetition and progression shows us that everything he was building for in those first 5 days built towards day six. Chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, give us day 7. All of creation has been created. Day 7, verses 1 through 3, chapter 2. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all of their hosts. By the seventh day, God completed his work for which he had done, and he had rested on the seventh day from all of his work which he had done. And then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he had rested from all of his work which God had created and made. We come to the story that now, after all of creation, all of the very good creation that was now complete, we're told that he rested. And you ask yourself, why would God need to rest? Was he tired after 6 days? Did he overexert himself in creating of the world? Clearly not. Clearly, he could have created the earth in the snap of a finger without any effort put forth. It didn't exhaust him to create the earth. So why would he give us rest on the seventh day? The seventh day, he said that he sanctified it. He made it special. He separated its purpose from the other 6 days. He was giving us an example, demonstrating what a day would look like to set aside and pause and make purpose for the seventh day. Later, we see the Jewish culture make that into the Sabbath, the idea that the seventh day produces something special, and we must rest to understand the magnitude of the first 6 days. He removed it from common use of the other 6 days. What is interesting about day seven, we don't see the phrase morning and evening. There's no summary of goodness to show that it was complete. The idea that rest and reward of the labor was enjoyed eternally with no end. This special day to reflect back on what was made in the first 6 days. So if you will, come back to verse 26 and 27 with me, and let's talk about what we can learn from that day six, the crescendo of what it was that was so important on day six. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the seas, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over the earth,